Today on Doomed! Dawn of JFK Jr. and, well, pretty much every other dead celebrity that QAnon believers would really like to have back. On today's episode of Doomed with Matt Binder, we will be bringing you on the ground to this past Tuesday's great big QAnon gathering in Dallas, Texas, where QAnon believers, well, thought that JFK Jr., or is it JFK himself, was going to show up, and alive, obviously, along with many other their faves who are actually dead and not alive. This is all very confusing to you right now, I'm sure, but it will make complete sense because right now I'm going to bring up on my feed not only myself, but my guest for today. Let me bring us up. Here we are. Stephen Monticelli. He is an independent journalist and the publisher of Protean Magazine. And he was on the ground there in Dallas, Texas when this all happened. And if he looks familiar to YouTube and Twitch live stream viewers right now, it's because Stephen's been on this show before when he was live at the great big QAnon conference in Dallas earlier this summer. Stephen, welcome back to the show. Oh, wait one second. Now you're up on the feed. There we go.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Sorry about that. QAnon got in, you know, the Q got with my sound levels and he messed it up.
They're trying to silence me.
Right. But for now, though, now that your volume's up, my volume's up, we're both on the feed, people can see us and hear us. I can say, enjoy the show, if I'm going to use QAnon jargon. Now, Stephen, why don't we give people a bit of background here for those tuning in and maybe they weren't online this past week and had no idea that QAnon believers went to the grassy knoll in Dallas to see JFK Jr. or perhaps JFK show up in the flesh and not rotting flesh, not zombies, but they were alive all along. Give us a little bit of background here. What the hell happened? Why did they go? I don't even know where to begin. I guess the night before when you ran into them, right? Tell us about that.
So where it begins for me is that I had seen, I guess, what is it now? We're in Thursday. So I believe Sunday is when I first saw a post by a researcher on Twitter. I wish I had actually looked this name up before we started talking. It's escaping me. But they had posted some Telegram chats about this particular theory or hypothesis to, you know, make sure that I don't malign the actual term for theory in science. And so they had this hypothesis that based off of some very complex numerology equations, we would see JFK Jr. and also potentially his father reveal themselves to the public on November 2nd, around the same time that JFK Sr. himself was shot in 1963. Never mind that that happened on November 22nd and not November 2nd. So maybe there was a bit of a mistake in the math there. So the next day, I just happened to be downtown with a good friend of mine. He's a sports journalist. If you are sports people, you may know his name. His name's Tim Cato. And he and I were just walking downtown to go get a drink. And we walk by what's called AT&T Discovery Plaza. Fun fact, if you may have missed this in the news, AT&T had a big part in funding OAN. And OAN is brain poison. But that's an aside. So we see this large gathering of people, and I don't live downtown, and I say, that looks interesting, because a few nights prior, I had seen a photo by a local sort of Dallas Twitter personality who owns a tea place called Rakasan Tea, and he had posted a photo of negative 48 in Dallas, in AT&T Plaza, looking like he was kind of blessing someone, you know, kind of hands out, looks like they were doing the sort of tent revival thing. And So they didn't actually know who he was at the time. They said, anybody know who this is? So when we see this crowd, I have this hunch. I go, okay, this might be a QAnon thing. And my friend Tim says, no, that's not really the case. It's probably not. Like, this place usually has a crowd. And I say, no, let's go and look for the context clues. And within 10 seconds, we see the acronym, you know, for where we go one, we go all. We start seeing the Trump shirts. And then we start seeing even more mind-boggling stuff. I take a photo and I go around to the other side, and they're all kind of standing there like turkeys with their heads up in the rain, because there's this big digital display board in AT&T Plaza that they were all kind of gawking at. And I noticed that some of their shirts said Trump, JFK Jr., like an election shirt. And it all clicked in my mind. It all came together, and I thought, holy shit. And my friend was kind of just flabbergasted. He was like, why are you like this? How did you know that this was what this was? And I was flabbergasted, right? So I post this on Twitter immediately, and then it just goes nuts. So the next day, I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, I don't know actually when these people are going to meet. I'm not even sure what Telegram channel this was from, but I know they're going to be at Dealey Plaza. And so I decided to show up at Dealey Plaza around like 9 something in the morning. And then the rest happened.
I will say that this was easily the largest public gathering of QAnon followers since, I would say, January 6th. I mean, obviously they've had their conferences where they have to buy tickets and they go there in their private like venues, right, that they've rented. But in terms of just like a public gathering in a public space where anyone could go, this had to be the largest since January 6th. This was what would you put the crowd at?
I mean, it was hundreds. It was at, you know, around 11-ish, some like 200, maybe 300. Some people may have estimated more, but it was a very significant crowd of people there who appeared to be true believers. There are definitely some people mixed in that were kind of locals gawking at the situation. They had stumbled upon it because there are definitely not 200, 300 people hanging out at Dealey Plaza on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday afternoon, like during the week, during the cold months. That just doesn't happen in Dallas. So it was significant and, you know, notable for like multiple reasons. And so I was hanging out there for hours. They eventually told me through some conversations with the attendees, they're expecting to see JFK Jr. And some of them thought also his father and maybe even other parts of the family would show up around 1229, 1230, which is the time when JFK was shot in 1963.
That's a very meaningful day for him, time for him, I would say. He would definitely choose that time period to come. Well, and
so, you know, as you probably can guess, none of that transpired. They did not show up. I can understand why JFK Sr. might be a little, you know, a little nervous or feel a little dicey about showing up to Dealey Plaza at 1230 during November. I understand why. Last time it happened, it didn't work out so well. Right. So,
absolutely. And if he,
you know, it was,
I'm sure
this didn't make sense.
I'm sure they thought he was possibly for a little bit. They probably thought he was just a little bit late, being that he would be, again, we're talking JFK Sr. now, the former president, being that he would be about, what, 108 years old by now?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, for those that are not, you know, up to date on all of the Kennedy clan lore, 1999 is when JFK Jr. died in a plane crash. And, you know, not unlike Elvis, there has been this sort of persistent conspiratorial theorizing around, are they still alive? Why might they still be alive? Assuming that they are alive, what have they been up to? And that is a whole, you know, side of this, you know, what people thought JFK Jr. or JFK and or JFK Sr. Had been up to during this period of time when they had hypothetically been in hiding.
Right. Now, I guess for people who regular viewers of this show definitely are familiar with the JFK is still alive subsection of QAnon believers. And I think it's important to point out right now that when you say like a couple hundred people are there, we're not even talking like that's extra impressive to me because, again, not all QAnon people believe that JFK Jr. is still alive. It's like a faction within QAnon.
That's right.
So when we say 300 possibly plus QAnon believers were down at Dealey Plaza, we're specifically talking about 300 possibly plus QAnon believers who specifically believe in the JFK Jr. portion of the Q, right, of the various QAnon conspiracy theories.
Right. There's, you know, a whole host of QAnon influencers, right, that make this ecosystem of grifters up, and they all have their kind of own flavor of theories that they peddle. And the two particular influencers that seem to be primarily responsible for this conclave in Dallas were Michael Protzman, who goes by Negative 48, and this other gentleman named Mike Penny, who has like a marketing company, and they've done YouTube videos together. And this is, as you said, a sort of subsect, a faction of QAnon fandom. And these folks are really into numerology, and they mix numerology with this sort of messianic millenarian Christianity that predicts this sort of apocalyptic type occurrence. And by apocalyptic, I don't necessarily mean like fire and brimstone. I mean sort of just like the heavens opening up, right? Right. And this revelatory sort of day of revelation and reckoning. And that's what some of these people expected, truly, sort of this grand reveal that would be the sort of small domino on that funny domino meme, where at the end of it, it's like God Emperor Trump and JFK Jr. end up being in the White House, and all of the satanic Illuminati cabal people get rounded up by Michael Jackson and Robin Williams and Richard Pryor.
Right.
I'm not kidding.
Right. No, absolutely. And I guess I should continue. You already gave some of it. But again, you know, this JFK Jr. subsection of QAnon believers, like you said, believe that JFK Jr. has been alive all along. And that, and most of this lore is still from like before the 2020 election. It's still being updated, I guess. They haven't really gotten around to explaining why JFK Jr., if he was still alive, why he wouldn't have unveiled himself when it mattered to reelect Donald Trump. But
You know, mind you, remember they did predict that he would show up on July 4th in 2019, and that did not transpire. Right. So they keep moving the goalposts.
Right.
It's, you know,
all part of the plan. So they believe.
You gotta trust.
Right.
It's a divine, godly plan for these folks.
Right. And so they believe that JFK Jr. is going to unveil himself as always being here. He never died. And he was waiting for the right moment to come out and unveil his support for Donald Trump. He was supposed to replace Mike Pence as the VP pick. And because he was JFK Jr., Democrats would have flocked to the Trump JFK Jr. ticket along with Trump's Republican base, and heralding in a new era of Trump JFK Jr. forever, I guess. And it's obviously right. Evolved. And you had mentioned Negative 48, and that other fellow, he goes by Whiplash 347, right?
I think that's right.
Yeah, right. Those were the two main telegrams that I saw who were involved in this. And what's interesting is now these are two Telegram channels that are huge. Whiplash 347 has 262,000 subs. Negative 48 has around 105,000 subs. And this was new to me. Now, Negative 48 had shared a message from Whiplash 347. And this is the latest here, that Trump would be reinstated as the 19th president. Because remember that whole, for those who haven't listened, who are, you know, there's a whole QAnon belief that America's been a corporation for a certain amount of time. So we haven't had real presidents since the 19th president. I honestly forget the details with that one and why they believe that. I'll have to look it up. But, you know, so JFK Jr., Trump is reinstated, calls up his new VP, JFK Jr., and they declare that everything from 1871 was illegal and unconstitutional, and that Justice Thomas would be the only Supreme Court justice remaining. Then, for some reason, Trump would step down. JFK Jr. would become president. Like he would have if it wasn't for Killary plotting to kill him. I don't know where that comes from, but it's in the message. He will then call up General Michael Flynn as his VP. And then, because we aren't happy with a President JFK Jr., Trump will become one of the seven new kings. Apparently, U.S. will now have kings. And most likely, Trump himself, he wouldn't just be plain old one of the seven kings. He would be the King of Kings, which I believe is what Christians call Jesus Christ, isn't it?
There's a whole other thread here that we haven't even touched on, because that's all right. And something that some people told me at this event was that they believed that JFK and JFK Jr. were a part of a bloodline that goes back all the way to Jesus Christ, and that there was actually a sort of religious, like, resurrection kind of element to this, because these folks were very much, you know, talking about divine plans and this sort of tie-in to very strange interpretations of, you know, the Christian Bible, right? And, you know, so this is why in the past I've written for Byline Times about the sort of Christian fascistic and also kind of borderline theocratic, if not outright theocratic, aspects of this movement. You know, where it aligns with sort of this dominionist theology where they think, you know, because Trump is a part of this divine plan, he will then be like the divine king of our new cleansed United States, you could say. And it's unsettling, the lengths that people will go to justify that sort of belief.
Right. And it ties in with what you were saying before about the sort of like end of days they were looking forward to with their numerology and everything. So I teased early on in our discussion that they weren't just looking forward to JFK Jr. And then we also mentioned how some of them thought that JFK himself was going to show up, and he would have been very old, and very symbolic time for him to show up with the exact time of his. But I mean, if he wasn't,
even if it was 20 days early, you know, never mind the typographical error.
Right, right. But also, does it make any sense in their lore if he never died? That time frame would be sort of meaningless, wouldn't it? Like, it wouldn't be the time he was assassinated. It would just been the time that they had said he was when they had a bunch of actors do some like CGI back in the, what, how many years ago? Many, many decades ago. I'm not even going to try to do the math in my head right now. I'm not a numerology guy. But, you know, they also believed that other dead celebrities were going to make their grand return. Tell me more about that, especially as someone who was there on the ground. I mean, is this something that they were like just openly talking about? Like, this seems like if you heard people saying this on the street, you would definitely say to yourself, okay, I feel bad for that person. There's something not all there. There's something wrong with them.
I mean, people would talk to me about this stuff, and there were some people who I'd kind of had to charm them to get them to feel a little opened up about it. And it helped, I guess, because I'm not like a, oh, sorry, my dog is whining and looking at me. I'm not like a NBC or CNN or anything like that. And so I would ask people why they were there, and I'm like, I'm not here to judge. Like, I just want to know. And to be honest, I wasn't going to say anything to them to judge them. I just wanted to know. And they would tell me, but some of them would say, oh, well, you might think I'm crazy or this sort of thing. And I mean, I could understand why they might feel that way, because whenever they would explain it, they would describe this idea of, you know, this whole plan that involves a large number of people who the idea was that because they were traveling the world and they were these celebrities and they had access to all these sort of spaces that normal people didn't have access to, that they saw things that would then, you know, clue them into the Illuminati pedophile cabal theory, and that then they would fake their death in order to, oh my goodness. I gotta go to the peanut gallery over here.
It's right. I think when you're not around, your dog is perusing the Telegram channels on your phone or computer. And
yeah, he doesn't like me talking about this because it's making him feel embarrassed. But the idea being that, yeah, they're a part of this large conspiracy that involves like witness protection and or these prosthetic face masks, that they are a part of this plan to then, you know, do this big reveal and pull out the rug from underneath this cabal of, you know, elites that are doing all this human trafficking stuff, which is not to say that there isn't an awful problem of human trafficking in the world, which maybe they in part are reacting to, but it's not this. It's definitely not this very strange and particular explanation that involves, you know, some people told me they had seen Robin Williams just the other day in Dallas.
That's definitely one I would like to hear. If I mean, I wish it was true. Robin Williams, great comedian, great actor.
I know.
I've heard he's from people who've known him that he's a great guy. Who else did they say that they were waiting on? I don't want to say rising from the dead, because again, these people in their view never died. It was all pretend. It was all put on for part of a bigger plan, and they've been hiding alive this whole time.
That's right. So Richard Pryor was mentioned. I wrote about this for Rolling Stone after JFK Jr. failed to materialize. There was this idea that they would then see JFK Jr. at the Rolling Stones concert in Dallas that was happening on the same day later that evening, which I went and kind of checked out around it. And, you know, I didn't see any sort of protest or anything outside of it. And then I was like, oh, no, they're actually all just going to go see the Rolling Stones concert, because there had been chatter in the Telegram chat about exactly that. And they ended up posting photos as well as their theories that you know, maybe they had indeed actually seen JFK Jr. They just didn't realize it because he was in a mask and he was playing the role of Keith Richards. And that meanwhile, Michael Jackson had also been playing the role of Mick Jagger, and the pianist who, gosh, everybody forgets their name, and I also do as well. And I feel bad because they did forget their name in the Telegram chat. They were like, yeah, the person on the piano was Elvis. So, you know, there's just a lot of complexity. And yet at the same time, it's like a facade, right? It looks like it has a lot of detail from far away. But the more you examine it, it'll just collapse under its own weight the moment you poke at any single part of it.
Right. Now, were they openly were they saying they thought they saw some of these people at Dealey Plaza too, or was this all just at the Rolling Stone?
It was around Dallas at AT&T Plaza as well.
Okay.
There's talk of seeing, you know, these people around there, and they would kind of just go up to random people and kind of basically accuse them of being secretly a celebrity.
Right. And we should say that now, and I've talked about Vinny Fuchsia on this show before, the guy that everyone in QAnon lore, in the QAnon world, yeah, believe is JFK Jr. in disguise. But now there is a second person who they believe, or some people believe, is JFK Jr. Juan Q. Patriot or something like that. I can't remember his.
So I don't even know about this one. I'm not surprised, because there was one guy who really was convinced that Mike Lindell is actually JFK Jr. in disguise. And he like showed me not only a photo of himself with Mike Lindell, but then like photos comparing Mike Lindell and JFK Jr. And they're like crow's feet around their eyes and the wrinkles and stuff in their veins around their hands. Very convinced, and that there's just a very good prosthetic mask that Mike Lindell was wearing. And I mean, I've seen Mike Lindell in person before at the CPAC conference. I was like,
he's got that. And you thought to yourself, he's got those Kennedy good looks.
No, but the thing is, though, the reason I know this is all bullshit is that I am actually JFK Jr.
There we go.
Like that is the real story. Here's the scoop for you.
Folks, 9:27 p.m. on November 4th.
The complexity of this world they've imagined is really something.
Now, you know, it's been fun talking about it, obviously, but now to move to talking about it in a serious manner, because this is right. You know, what I think is going on here, and it's really the basis for most conspiracy theories and the people who believe in them, but especially with those who believe in all these dead celebrity stuff actually being alive. Most people who believe in these type of conspiracy theories, at least, you know, maybe it doesn't transfer over to like aliens and things like that, but and Bigfoot, but these type of conspiracy theories, they are unable to live or handle in an emotional way or in a mental capacity life, the realities of life. Specifically when we see these dead celebrities actually being alive. I mean, what we're seeing here, and by the way you mentioned, and I think it's super important that you mentioned too, that these people who believed in the Rolling Stones theory were people who bought tickets to go to the Rolling Stones concert. So I'm going to assume, knowing the main QAnon demographic and the Rolling Stone demographic, that put that in a big...
perfect circle, yes, basically.
Yes, we got people of the boomer age group here. And so, and all these celebrities that you've mentioned, for the most part, Robin Williams sort of transcends generations, but boomers like him too. But, you know, Richard Pryor, Elvis.
Prince.
You know, obviously JFK is beloved by boomers. That age group obviously looked up to these people, admired them. These were their faves growing up. And in some way, they have been unable to handle the reality that death came for these larger-than-life celebrities. And perhaps looking at their own lives and as they're getting up there in age, they're unable to handle the fact, and again, both emotionally, mentally, that, you know, this is what happens. People die. So they come up with these, or they don't even come up with them a lot of times. They believe in things that are told to them. These people are actually still alive in the hopes that, you know, like, hey, look, death didn't come for them. That life continues for those celebrities. Well, I'm not getting old. I'm plenty of life left for me too.
I think that is absolutely a part of it. I mean, I think another part of it that I saw is that some people, they intuitively sense that something's wrong, and they're not incorrect to assume that, but they don't have any sort of structure for understanding the problems that we're facing in the world right now. And then they are awash in this disinformation landscape that is pernicious and pumps this stuff out so fast, faster than anyone can hope to address it. And so then they latch on to these ideas, which are, I think it's a universal human experience to be attracted to the idea that there are pieces of information and there are pieces of knowledge that are powerful and are kept from them by powerful people who are bad. And, you know, the idea that they have some inside insight to this knowledge and these secrets, it makes them feel like they're a part of the in-group and that they're working towards saving the world. And that is actually, you know, something that kind of tickles our hindbrain very much. It's a common idea of like someone's concealing something from me and it's harming me. And, you know, I can go and find out like who's stealing the food and they're lying about it. Now this is like that, but taken to the extreme of like harvesting bodily fluids from children in these like secret torture rituals. Like that's what they've conceived of this for themselves. And they want the world to be better, I think, or at least maybe more comfortable for them and easily understood. And it's a kind of an easier explanation for them to grasp onto that there are like bad people, and only if the heroes in the world can solve it, just like in the movies or in, you know, the great man of history theory, that then will be better, as opposed to like comprehending that we live in an economic system that is like detached from human interests at this point. It's just kind of like reproducing itself for the sake of reproducing itself. And, you know, we can't solve climate change because of for-profit oil companies and shit like that, right? And you know, the concept of like the secret cabal. And then also, people are lost. They have lost a sense of belonging. One of the few institutions that remains in the United States that gives people a sense of like civil community is church. And evangelicals and Southern Baptists and stuff are like the most likely to be a part of the QAnon movement. So there's like a huge letter that thousands of pastors and stuff have signed on to basically saying, wow, this is a real big problem. People are talking about QAnon in our church. And it's like creating this syncretic, fucked up belief system that is radical and maybe like cultish and violent, hypothetically. And so like we need to like laugh at this, but also look at it for what it is. And then understand that like de-radicalizing these people is going to be tough because they've also often been alienated from their own friends and family because of how sucked in they've gotten into this belief structure. And, you know, if you're familiar with Robert Putnam's book, Bowling Alone, like, you know, they don't even have a fucking bowling league to go join anymore to get a sense of community. Right. Doesn't really exist. So, like, what do they do? If you rip them from this, it's almost like a form of ego death. And I don't mean to be, like, too depressing about it, but it's like we got to really think about that. How do we get people to walk away from this precipice? Because it's like an abyss, man. It is deep. And it could just go forever into this deranged madness.
I mean,
and I feel bad for these people.
I mean, the fact that, I mean, I feel like people like you and me and other people who are well-versed in the QAnon world, you know, we had an idea that this was going to keep going. But I think for a lot of people who just heard about it in passing and really became aware of it on January 6th, thought that, hell, this will all end now that Trump's gone out of office. And, you know, but no way. We got a lot. There are a lot of people deep into this. And I think, you know, in terms of de-radicalization, I think for a lot of people in QAnon, they're gone. I hate to be the downer here. I think mitigation in terms of keeping people away is the main thing, in a sense.
Right. Well, yeah, we need to make it there be some sense of social consequence. I mean, like with the KKK, or, you know, I don't want to be too extreme in my comparisons, but like, pardon me, I've just been drinking a beer.
That's all good.
I got a drink to forget sometimes. The the fact that there are members of ISIS that have been de-radicalized, or actual KKK members that have been de-radicalized, it does give me hope that there is opportunity for some of these folks to walk away. But at the same time, I think what I hear from you, and I think I agree 100% on the sentiment here, is like, we can't fucking negotiate with this. We can't compromise with this. This is beyond the pale. This is like so far gone. There is no reasonable middle ground here. And we need to laugh at this, because otherwise we might fucking cry about how this is where we are as a country. Like, this is what is happening. And I've been privileged enough to be able to go on like international radio programs. And I was talking on a Spanish, like in Spain, radio program. And they were telling me about how it's not QAnon there, but in Europe and like in Spain in particular, and in France, we see it filter in through the international news to some extent with the anti-vax protests. It's not QAnon, but it's basically the same problem. They have the same disinformation problem. And QAnon is just like the American expression of it that like kind of bleeds into the broader English speaking world. When it comes to like, yeah, England or Australia or Canada, because it's so cryptic that, you know, even like second language English speakers in Europe or in other places may be like, I'm not going to read that shit. Like, I'm not going to go that far down the rabbit hole to understand it. They have their own stuff over there that's driving similar phenomenon of extremism and these like spontaneous protests, which are definitely, you know, I'm not like putting a tin foil hat on or anything because I have no idea exactly what's behind this, but it's like a fucking psyop.
Right. Right. And I just want to go back for a second because I don't want to, you know, I talk a lot about de-radicalization on this show and I don't want people to think I'm like being like dismissive of it. But here's what I think in terms of that. Like you brought up like there's KKK and white supremacist members and white supremacists who've been de-radicalized, obviously. And I feel like with that, obviously, yes. And there will be some QAnon people. There are actually people. There's a whole Reddit subreddit where former QAnon believers gather to discuss to like, you know, find that community of former QAnon believers. And that's great. But, you know, with you know, KKK, from what I've seen with KKK members and white supremacists who've been de-radicalized, there is like maybe this is not the best phrase to use for this particular show, but there's a come to Jesus moment where there is some sort of awakening, you know, where there's they're ready to open their mind and they're willing to listen and you know, try to change in some way. You know, maybe they come across a black neighbor who helps them out in some big way and it really smashes their worldview apart. But with QAnon, like, you know, there's nothing in reality there really. Like, you know, like when we're dealing with racial issues with KKK members, you know, that's the real world in terms of they will come across people who they hate, who will show kindness to them, and maybe that will, you know, shake them up a little bit. QAnon, all the things have fallen apart, and that should be, in some sense, not even like the end of it. I'm not, but should make them question. But they're just not. You know, there's nothing there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like a lot of people have talked about this, and we can theorize about it until the end of the earth about what are the sort of underlying psychological reasons that people will continue to cling on to this or even be attracted to this in the first place. Like deep-seated fears, prejudice, bigotry. I mean, the fact of the matter is the adrenochrome theory is basically, and I'm not the first person to say this, it's a recycled version of blood libel.
Right.
And blood libel, it doesn't fucking matter that it has never held up. What has mattered is that it's persisted. And the effect of its persistence, the fact that, you know, there was like a Capitol Police member that got caught with like a copy of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. If you don't know what that is like the original anti-Semitic blood libel conspiracy theory that was propagated by Christian fascists in the United States in like the 1900s, 20th century, early. And a lot of the people who were involved in like pushing that ended up going to jail for sedition. I'm not usually a fan of anyone going to jail for sedition, but like they were quite literally spreading this like baseless, violently insightful, hateful propaganda that had no basis to it in reality. And the end goal of it was to just, you know, incite. And it was to, you know, tap into people's prejudice, fear. The themes of those movements were the exact same things of QAnon, like kind of like bubbling bigotry of some form or another, whether it's like transphobia or anti-Semitism or racism, a fear of like a global communist plot and a communist government, fear of immigration and the other, and then just like straight up like religious fervor.
Right.
The themes are all the same. Right. The content is just kind of what's changed. And, you know, QAnon is particularly pernicious and dangerous because it's like a choose your own adventure. You find whatever thread you want. There's a whole bunch of them. They weave together. You know, I've made this fucking pun before. It's a big quilt with a giant Q on it. And they literally sold one at that goddamn conference in Dallas that looked like that. And so anyone can kind of tap into this if they have whatever that predisposition is. And then the concerning part is that, yeah, there are some people who will just persist, and they'll persist in spite of the football getting pulled away every goddamn time and then flipping on their ass and looking like fools. And like, that's the power of belief.
Right.
It's, you know, it's a form of delusion eventually,
right.
But you know, for these people, you have to give them some credit. Within the world that they have the blinders on, that they see, what they think makes sense.
Right.
It's rational
right.
in the myopic sense that they view it in. But it isn't rational to any of us.
Right. Right. You know, the overlap, without a doubt, there's, I mean, again, maybe not a perfect circle like there is the Rolling Stones boomers and the QAnon boomers, but there is huge overlap between, you know, white supremacy and QAnon. And I think, you know, the anti-Semitic sentiment is the most in your face for sure. I think the interesting thing with QAnon, though, is like oftentimes like people who fall into you know, an organized white supremacist group, they're looking for a scapegoat and usually don't think too much about it. It's just easy to blame the other, and they found camaraderie of people who blame the other. And, you know, that's why I think they're probably a little bit easier to talk to than a QAnon or a conspiratorial believer, because even like the very basic, I would say like a huge portion of like even like QAnon curious people get really deep into it really fast and become true believers. And it's like that to me is the main difference. It's not that, like, you know, obviously QAnon is super anti-Semitic at its core with you know the adrenochrome stuff, but to me it's like I feel like people get a better understanding if they do see like the differences between, like, you know, some young white guy who can't find a job and gets convinced to blame, like, you know, Mexican immigrants. And, you know, he can be talked out of it at some point because he's probably not thinking too much about it other than what he's told. And then, like, the QAnon people who are on their computer and diving deep into the fact that JFK Jr. is going to show up and become the president and make General Michael Flynn the vice president, and they will declare that Donald Trump is the King of Kings. I mean, it's to me, I think there is a difference there in terms of, you know, how we deal with them at the very least.
Right. I mean, one seems like pretty just tried and hackneyed tribalism. And then the other is this sort of more paranoiac, conspiratorial thought process that doesn't necessarily define tribe in such a facile way. You know, it's not like you're white and I'm not white, or your hair is this color, my hair is this color, my nose is shaped this way and your nose is shaped that way. It's like you're a part of this secret thing that is like demonic or satanic or evil. Quite literally, that's a big word that goes around. It's like they're evil and they're this in-group that hates everybody else. And where that overlaps with anti-Semitism is, I think, a bit more clearer in terms of the sort of conspiratorial elements of Nazism and neo-Nazism and white supremacy, where they kind of conceive of this cabal, right? This like plan that at some level can be considered tribal, but isn't so simplistic in the boundaries and the lines. And then it gets so convoluted because we live in the era of everyone's media feed is their media feed. And so the potential for these like multiplicities, or these like, you know, endless numbers of singularities of people's idea of exactly what those boundaries of that tribe are, it gets fucking confusing. It's a labyrinth and people get lost in it. And, you know, if there's as many turns as they are willing to make, basically. And I think you're right. There's that sort of like come to Jesus moment where, you know, people may have that crack open and they can crawl through it, but they have to have something on the other side. Right. And I think that's where the real challenge for like anyone who's concerned about this is they can maybe contribute in some way. And, you know, this is very general because I'm no expert here, but like, how can we figure out a way to like actually welcome those people who are remorseful and forlorn about how lost they were? How can we welcome them back into society and, you know, let them laugh about it maybe a little bit?
All right, for sure. I think, yeah, that's a great thing to, you know, the thing is, there are people who've come out of it and they seem to really, you know, actually, and I think this is great. You usually see this when, you know, people get out of cults, they make it their duty to be available to people. And I think that's who were in their position and want to also leave. And I think that's always great. So, getting back to Dallas, obviously, like we've just spent all this time talking about, these people continue to believe that at some point this will all happen. But was there any sentiment you saw online or, you know, when the crowd started to disperse on the ground there of people who were sort of like maybe feeling what we've just been talking about in terms of like, hey, wait a minute, or at least like maybe not questioning QAnon, but realizing that they were wrong and it made them look bad in a sense?
Yes. Yes, there was that. There were definitely commenters in the Telegram chat to the effect of, you know, there are a lot of people who felt embarrassed or felt that they were made to look stupid. You know, they came out here, they were led to believe something and nothing happened. You know, but you also had a lot of people basically making justifications or trying to say, well, no one made you do anything. And we're all adults here. And, you know, some of us can continue to choose to have faith, basically. And so there was a bit of a schism. It's hard to really say exactly how many of those true believers were sort of rattled to the core by this and what that will end up meaning for them. And, you know, once this sort of hit the news, a bunch of people probably joined the Telegram chat, and who knows exactly to what extent people were kind of trying to sow doubt intentionally or be trolls or whatever. And where I could report on stuff that I felt was legit was like when it actually aligned with what I heard from people on the ground. And, you know, what a lot of people on the ground seem to be really sincerely believing. I don't know about, you know, what will end up happening, but I do think some of, you know, the coverage of this did cause some of them to think twice. And that's all we can hope for, I guess, right? Is for someone to think twice or think at all in the midst of this. And, you know, hopefully start to maybe take a couple steps and back out. I mean, I don't know exactly if it's normal for it to happen all at once or if it happens more gradually, but I'm hopeful because I don't think anyone likes to feel fooled. I don't think anyone likes to feel hoodwinked.
Right. Right. Absolutely. This has been a great conversation. I was looking forward to talking to you about the Dallas stuff, and we went into obviously related conversation about de-radicalization and what makes them really dive further into this. And I think that was I almost wish it was a separate episode so I can put it so it could be up front and not like caught in the bottom, like towards the end of the discussion.
You know, I think it went where it needed to go because, you know, I could entertain you all with all of the twists and turns and all these details, but they're so fast shifting. It's just like moving sand, right? We need to zoom out and we need to look at like really what are the contours of this thing. And if I'm not gonna, you know, get in trouble for stretching this metaphor, it's like we're looking at desertification. We're not looking at like how are the dunes moving. And I think that's what's important here because it is bad. It's bad. It's motivating people to go and show up and do stuff in real life. These people vote.
Right.
These people join their school boards. You know, a bunch of people who were at the Capitol riots ended up getting elected to various positions across the country.
Right. Stephen,
it's happening.
Absolutely. I mean, it's concerning. We saw it on Tuesday, not talking about Dallas now, talking about the election. We saw the school, how that school, the whole school board, really propaganda has meditized into what it is right now, where I think it was something like 75% of the, I forget the name of the conservative group, but the conservative organization that was basically supporting all these school board takeovers, 75% of the people they endorsed ended up winning roles on school boards. It's bad. It's concerning for sure. Stephen Monticelli, independent journalist and publisher of Protean Magazine, thank you so much for joining me tonight. Is there anything you would like to say to end this and then also promote? Feel free to name drop and do whatever websites and anything you want right now. The floor is yours for as long as you'd like.
Thank you. I'll keep it short. You know, if you'd like to see the reporting that I did, you can check out my Twitter. There's a big thread I'm at STEVANZETTI. That's Steve Vanzetti. You can read the reporting in the Rolling Stone. I wrote two different articles about these shenanigans. As Matt mentioned, Protean Magazine, it's a leftist literary magazine. We publish a print edition as well as new stuff online every week. The print edition is sort of our annual prestige fundraiser because we're a nonprofit and we don't really care about making a ton of money. We just want to put out good stuff. So I've written about QAnon for that as well. I went to the QAnon convention here in Dallas, which is what brought me first to speak with Matt a couple months ago. So check that out. Please give them a follow on Twitter. And, you know, we both have Patreons because we're not, you know, big sort of corporate entities with advertisements. So check those out as well if you have liked what you have seen today or if you've been enlightened or disturbed by any of this stuff. So, you know, it's what I enjoy doing and it keeps me motivated. And surprisingly, my mental health is okay. So that is pretty much all I got. Thank you, Matt. It's a real pleasure to be here again.
I feel like some people are just, you know, built for doing this type of stuff. Like, I feel the same way as you sometimes. Like, you know, it's kind of shocking. I hate to say we've become desensitized, but that's probably part of it too. But some people are just, you know, able to take in all this stuff and somehow not, you know, want to, I don't know. I have no idea what the analogy could be, but yeah.
I mean, all I can say is, you know, as long as you sleep well at night, that's fine. If you start not sleeping well at night, maybe you should start thinking about changing what you're doing. So yeah, I agree. I would not be, you know, I'd rather not do anything else. I've tried that and it didn't work. So here we are.
Thank you so much for joining me tonight, Stephen. Great to have you back. Can't wait to have you on again. Have a great night.
You as well. Thanks.
Take care. All right, ladies and gentlemen. And also I have the links to Stephen's pieces and his Twitter thread in the comment section, the description on YouTube and on the Patreon. Really enjoyed that conversation. It was really great. Really great. I'm just going to send him a message. Folks, we're going to go to the second half of the show. Before we do that, patreon.com/Matt Binder. Last week, October 28th, last Thursday show, we hit. We actually broke through 300 patrons. We had a few more. But I had mentioned there that, you know, it's the last show of the month. November 1st was around the corner. And whenever that happens, we lose people due to declining cards. It happens. Things go on. Also, a few people leave at the beginning of the month because they, you know, things happen at the beginning of the month, rent, things like that. And so we did lose a few. We gained a few, but we lost a few. We're now back under 300 patrons. We're not too far. I think if like three people became patrons right now, we'd be back over 300. And if a few more would like to join to give me a little bit of, you know, leeway there, give me a little bit of padding room there, that'd be great too. But if you can't, that's cool. But let me thank the people who did become patrons over the past week. I'm also going to name drop people who became patrons during the show last week in case I neglected to mention one or two of them if they joined up too late. We got Cole L, Bill G, Patrick T, Jay Creates, Alessandra, Tim N, Thomas L, Carl S, Amber L, Martin H, and Will L. Thank you all so much for becoming patrons. It really does mean the world to me because without you, I can't do this show. I can't grow this show. That's simple. Number two, I'd like to say we are still demonetized on YouTube. Won't be able to reapply for monetization till the end of this month. And even then that could take some time once I do reapply. So I went ahead to twitch.tv and became an affiliate with Twitch. So subscribe there too, if you can. You get a free, by the way, if you're an Amazon Prime, if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, and I, this past Tuesday, I should say, I did a Twitch exclusive stream. You know how I'm doing Tuesday live streams now, like a little bonus every week? I did it exclusively on Twitch for the first time this past week. We talked about the Squid Game cryptocurrency scam, a whole altcoin based on Squid Game that turned out to be a huge rug pull scam. We talked about a hilarious Bloomberg article where they thought of a wonderful utopian scenario where Mario Kart was an NFT and only one person who bought the Mario Kart character could be that character in the game, meaning that a total of 41 people could ever play the latest Mario Kart. We when I say utopia, by the way, I mean dystopia. We also, it was the night of the elections this past Tuesday, so we talked about that a bit. I'll get a little bit more into that probably in the second half of the show because a lot of the results weren't in when I ended Tuesday. But twitch.tv/MattBinder, if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you get a free Twitch subscription. You can follow me on twitch.tv/MattBinder for free. But twitch.tv, I keep saying I'm like an old man here. Twitch also has subscriptions where they pay me a portion of your monetary subscription on Twitch. Again, I prefer, obviously, you joining on Patreon. But if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, you get a free Twitch subscription. Basically, you give me free money by hooking up your Twitch account to your Amazon Prime account and then subscribing to my Twitch channel with your free Twitch subscription that comes with Amazon Prime. Does that make sense? I feel like I'm not explaining it the best I can. I got to get a more punchier, quicker way to explain it. But YouTube.com/MattBinder, obviously, is still the main place because that's where most of you are. Ooh, I want to thank Evan B for just becoming a patron, just in time before I go to the second half of the show. Just about two away from 300, I think now. Back to 300, I should say. All right, what else? Doomedcast.com for the podcast version of this show. Follow me on Twitter at Matt Binder, Instagram at Matt Binder. What else? I do miss writing the that short-lived newsletter I did. So I'm really looking into relaunching that. So if you want to go to MISINFO, that's short for misinformation, misinfo.com, and subscribe to that. That's absolutely free to subscribe to. Misinfo.com, short for misinformation. There's been a few like real media fails, like that CNN milk thing that I wanted to write about. I'm probably going to talk about it actually in the second half of the show. And then a former New York Times writer went at it with Glenn Greenwald because the New York Times writer basically threw in the towel with his Substack and joined The Atlantic as a he moved his newsletter to The Atlantic instead of it being his own thing. And it was just, that was also a media ridiculousness that I wanted to get into. So definitely check that out. I'm going to be writing in there again. Also, I really enjoy this, the crypto stuff, if you guys haven't realized. So I am really, really thinking about launching a new podcast. It probably wouldn't be weekly, maybe once or twice a month. It would still be live streamed here, but it'd be bonus stuff for you guys. But like a separate podcast that literally just focuses on the cryptocurrency scams and shit and how the whole thing is a racket. I'll let you guys know. I'm really been like more so than ever these past few weeks, really been like inspired to do something with that. I just don't think enough people are talking about it, honestly. And when you see like Eric Adams, the incoming New York City mayor, talk about how he wants New York to be the cryptocurrency capital, and he's going to accept his first three paychecks as mayor in Bitcoin. I mean, I think people got to wake up to what's going on here and pay attention to this world because it's not good. It's not good what I'm seeing here. All right, folks, let's go to the, and I know people listen to this show who like crypto. And please, please call in. I love having the crypto conversations with you guys. You know it. You've heard the ones I've already had. I could go on with you for a quite substantial length, honestly. All right, let's go to the second half of the show. Lots to talk about. Got some clips. I'll open the phone lines. Open up your Skype app. Type in Doomed Live and you'll find the phone line. I'm also looking into other ways you can reach out to the show via Discord. And I've also found a possible text message. I need to drink a text message solution because without the super chats, because I'm demonetized, I can't get super chats through YouTube. I have a hard time pulling out comments in the live chat to read. So I've been looking into ways for you guys to reach out so I could read some comments and questions. But best way right now, open Skype, Doomed Live on Skype. And with that, I will see... Stick around if you're on the live stream. And of course, if you're a Patreon, subscribe to Patreon. For you freebie podcast listeners, I will see you all next time on Doomed.